Empower Radio presents The Butterfly Moment. It's the classic quantum leap in personal growth. Now here are your hosts for The Butterfly Moment, John Shelter and Carrie Hall on Empower Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Butterfly Moment radio show. My name is John Shelter.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hall.
I'd like to begin our first radio show with a little bit of gratitude here. First, I'd like to give a shout out and thanks to Brett Carey for his patience in putting together our program. We're very, very excited. This is kind of a lifelong dream that we've had to be able to have this forum to communicate. Also, our producer here, Dylan Lavelle, thank you very much for all your instructions. I really do appreciate it. I'd like to stop for a moment and just take a deep breath and get present and just establish the intention of a great interview and a great show. I'd like to, if I could, establish some ground rules that the show that we're going to do today in the future is going to be about you, the listener, and feel free, if you can, to give us feedback. At the end of this show, we'll give you our contact numbers, and hopefully you can either send us an email, visit our website, or somehow communicate, because we'd like to kind of follow the topics that are interest to you. The first question that I think most people have is, what the heck is a butterfly moment? I can tell you it's something very special to me. I think it's the classic quantum leap. As the life energies slowly break loose of the caterpillar from the cocoon, something truly, truly incredible occurs. The caterpillar that suddenly realizes that the darkness and despair it experienced in the cocoon is no longer its reality, and that the caterpillar is a butterfly. It's one of the most beautiful insects in the world. Best of all, it can fly. And so we'll be asking our guests today about their butterfly moment.
Kind of your personal revelation.
Yeah. And I'd like to have Carrie to read the introduction for Chip and Lisa Sinclair.
Well, we're very excited to have our first guest, Chip and Lisa Sinclair, today. Welcome to the Butterfly Moment. Couldn't think of two more special people to have. And Chip and Lisa do a lot of interesting things. One thing Chip wrote, The Butterfly Garden, it's actually a memoir. So for someone so young to write a memoir is pretty amazing. But Chip did have an amazing background. I'm actually going to read something that are basically Chip's own words. With his beginnings shrouded in mystery, Chip St. Clair believed that he was the only son of David St. Clair, a troubled Vietnam War veteran with a propensity towards violence, and Leslie Weaver, a mild-mannered wife and mother who was eminently preoccupied with soothing her husband's explosive rage. Now, as a teenager, Chip uncovered the brutal truth about his father. David St. Clair was not a traumatized war veteran at all. His name was Michael Grant, and he was a fugitive child murderer, one of America's most wanted, on the run for nearly three decades. After turning his own father in, Chip then began to embark on a journey that took him beyond the boundaries of impossibilities to the very precipice of hope, love, and self-discovery. Wow. So today, Chip and Lisa are going to answer some of our questions concerning this road to survival and hopefully their own butterfly moment. Chip, I read your book about 9 years ago, and I couldn't put it down. It was truly one of those wow moment upon moment of reading it. I really, really loved it. And I actually read it after I met you and Lisa at a speaking engagement. I remember we were up north, and I was just sitting there for hours on end reading the book, and John was looking at me saying, is it good? Is it good? I was like, you have got to read this. And guess what? He did.
Wow. Well, guys, first of all, I just want to say thanks so much for having us on the show, and congratulations on the new show. It couldn't happen to two nicer people or two more dear friends. I remember when I was writing The Butterfly Garden. Originally, it started out as a diary of sorts, kind of a journal, to be able to talk to Lisa about my feelings. I didn't expect the world to read it. I more or less just wanted to be able to get my feelings out, what had happened to me, to go through experiences and sort of find that healthy way to process them. Ultimately, it was a moment that occurred, not quite the butterfly moment, but a moment that occurred when Lisa said, you know what we're going to have to do is the world has to read this. So then we ended up obviously getting it published later.
Chip, I'll begin by asking you an obvious question in a way. What was it like to live with a man with such a violent criminal past? And as you're growing up, I mean, organically, somehow your body, your mind must have been telling you something's off.
Yeah, you know, it was walking on eggshells. I think that, you know, just the inherent fear I felt every day of my life was, I think, guidance enough to try, for me, to make sure that I avoided his wrath whenever possible. That was what I think was the impetus for my escape into literature and poetry, into the arts, because I needed to find not only a safe place, but a way to avoid my reality and my reality of how my father was. So that's where I found and sort of evolved my love for books and literature.
Can you tell us a little bit about the events leading up to everything that happened, actually before you were born and maybe after you were born?
Yeah, so ultimately, as you described about my father, he had murdered a child. Obviously, this was all unbeknownst to me until I was 22 years old in 1998. But my father was a small town, in small Indiana town, used car salesman, was dating a woman in Indiana when he was in his 30s, early 30s. I think he was around 30 years old. He was dating a woman named Vicky, who was a waitress and worked in the evenings. And she was she had two children, Scott and Thomas, from a prior relationship. And so my father just kind of filled in that gap as a father figure for them. And when she would leave for work in the evenings, he would come over and watch the boys and get them into the bath and ready for bed and put them to bed. And one evening, his wrath got the best of him, and he ended up beating both children. Actually, there were bruises in the shapes of footprints on their bodies. He beat and stomped them. Scott, unfortunately, died on the scene. Thomas survived, but three-year-old Scott Ingersoll was the reason my father ended up going to prison for involuntary manslaughter.
Chip, there was a part of your book that I found really compelling when you were out in Lake Michigan with your father, and you had kind of a moment underwater, actually, that was special to you.
Mm. Yeah, there was a time when I was about 8 years old, and my parents wanted to take this rare family vacation off of Lake Michigan. And anyone who knows Lake Michigan knows it looks like an ocean. It's not your typical lake for skipping stones, you know, and at 8 years old especially is intimidating. But my father had convinced me one morning to row across Lake Michigan. He wanted to get us out there, and I didn't think it was a good idea, but my dad wasn't someone you argue with, so he and I go in this rowboat, and he rows away from the shore, away from the dock. We're quite a ways out, rocking on these cobalt blue waves that makes up Lake Michigan, and no matter what time of year, it's always cold. And he had asked me if I wanted to swim, and he saw that I was afraid, and ultimately he said, I think you need to face your fears, and he picked me up and he threw me out of the boat into the lake. And I remember hitting the water and feeling like I was going to die, and there he was, rowing away. I was underwater, and I was thinking about a poem I recently read called Invictus, and that poem ultimately became what sparked my affinity for literature the rest of my life.
And your battle cry.
And my
life.
Exactly. That became my mantra. The last lines, I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul, is what helped me survive that day and realize that no matter what my father would do to me, I could survive and I could learn to thrive.
Chip, just getting back a little bit, your father was convicted of the murder of Scott?
He was. So in 1971, he committed the murder on August 1st, 1970, was imprisoned, went to trial, was imprisoned, was sentenced to 2 to 21 years. So after a minimum of 2 years, he would come up for parole every year. Well, when he was denied parole in 1973, his first time, he coordinated an escape plan with the woman who would become my mother, Leslie Weaver. And while he was outside of the prison walls on a work detail on the highway, she drove up in a white Buick Wildcat, and he jumped in the passenger seat and went on what she called their 26-year adventure on the run.
Wow.
When was it that you finally met your life partner, Lisa?
So it was in high school, Southfield Lathrop, where all the great
love stories,
of course, have occurred.
Begin.
Yeah. So I was a senior and she was a junior, and we had seen each other prior a few times, but there was just something about Lisa that struck me. I don't know if you can have more than one butterfly moment in your life, but that definitely was one of them. It showed me a world outside of those within the boundaries of my books that could be beautiful. And something so unfamiliar to me, she was somebody who represented strength in a woman, who represented confidence, security, and a nurturing I never knew. So I knew my life was going to change in meeting her, but I never anticipated how much.
Would you say it was love at first sight?
Yeah, I definitely would say it was love
for
at first
you,
sight.
For you, now Lisa, was it love at, I know it was love at first sight for Chip.
I would absolutely say it was love at first sight. There was this energy that was in the air, and I couldn't describe it, but it just something about him I needed to get to know.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And how long did you date before you got married?
6 years. It was 6 years.
Yeah.
Met in 92. Fall of 92 and married February, Valentine's Day, 99.
Now, Lisa, what did you think when you met Chip's parents, when you kind of stepped into this
dysfunction?
Yeah, this dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they had kind of this facade a bit, his family. So always, every time I'd go over to their house, I was greeted with a hug and you know, a lot of sarcasm and comedy, and of course, once I got to know them, there was little quirks that I came to know about his father. He needed things a certain way, and I saw his mom, you know, jumping, and you know, at every moment to make sure he was happy,
make sure the ice cubes weren't melted
in
the glass of tea.
Yeah, one of the earliest things was I remember. Chip and I went back to his house after school one day, and he got a call from his mom at work reminding him not to forget to fluff the pillows. And I didn't understand what that meant. And I said, fluff the pillows? What are you talking about? I mean, they literally needed to make it almost look like a museum and make sure they were just puffy enough. And you know, my parents, they were so supportive in our relationship because they really loved Chip. He really clicked with my mom too. They loved talking about space and all kinds of things and
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
You were actually there when Chip confronted his father and found out the truth.
Yeah. That night was really unlike anything I could have ever prepared for or imagined. There was something just kind of just eerie and awkward in the air. I could tell something was wrong, and that day the way that his father behaved, was behaving and talking to Chip, was it was unlike anything I'd imagine a father could say to a son.
It was even beyond the beyonds.
Yeah, it was just pushing all these lines, and I couldn't believe in just a simple conversation that somebody could get so heated and become so vulgar about things. It just...
Yeah, even disagreeing with my father about current events in the news could spark some sort of violent rage. So I tried to shelter Lisa from that for most of our relationship, but this night was far different than any other night.
And what actually happened that night?
Yeah, so we were talking about current events in the news. It was the day after Lisa's birthday. We were there celebrating her 21st birthday, and you know, my mother was well into her 10th can of beer, I think, by then. I mean, she was pretty drunk, and my father was just really on edge, and one thing led to another, and he started verbally assaulting me, insulting me. He was calling me all sorts of vulgar names, and Lisa had always told me, if he ever gets like that, get up, you know, just get up and leave, take the high road. So I did. I got up to leave, and he chased me down, and he began choking me, punched me in the face. I mean, things that I was used to in my life. This is another day in my life, but he eventually hit me and dislocated my shoulder. And in that moment, in that time that we were wrestling around in the living room, and my mother had come in, I didn't know this, but Lisa, I think that was kind of her butterfly moment. She called the police. For the first time, my father was arrested for domestic violence.
And for me, I had never seen anything like that. Like I said, my home life was really stable and my safe place, actually. And so I didn't even have to think. Mm-hmm. You know, I just ran
you
to the phone and called.
Right
I knew it.
Do.
I knew that was it. And when I came out to see, after I'd hung up the phone, I came out to see Chip. I shouted because his arm was dislocated and you know, you could see that what his father had done to him, and that's when his dad shouted at me and charged at me to shut up,
and then Chip, when your father was arrested, how did you find out that he was actually a fugitive?
Yeah, so I got out of the hospital late that night, around midnight or so, and my father was in jail for domestic violence. I was contemplating pressing charges for the assault. So I called my aunt, my dad's sister, who lived in Indiana, and I said, Aunt Chris, I'm looking for family support. I'm tired of dealing with this my whole life, you know, and I'm going to press charges. And she said, well, there's something I have to tell you. You can't tell Lisa this. You can't tell anybody. But your father's real name is not David St. Clair. And that's when she told me his real name is Michael Dean Grant, and he's a fugitive from Indiana. He's one of America's most wanted child murderers. Who escaped prison in 1973 with the help of my mother.
Mm. Unbelievable.
You know, one of the things I stated in the website introducing this visit is that you've turned pain into passion. And how have you done this? You have a foundation now, correct?
That's right. My butterfly moment kind of occurred a few years later. You know, I was on a path of not knowing anything about my past and even less about my future. And Lisa brought me one day to the butterfly house at the Detroit Zoo, one of her favorite places. And it was then, coincidentally, surrounded by butterflies, that I sort of had an epiphany. That's when I realized, having made sense of my life in literature and poetry by using metaphors and similes and symbolism and all sorts of tricks that authors use to convey a certain point, I would see life in those kinds of metaphors. And I began to equate the world with a butterfly garden. I began to see all of the, you know, these beautiful creatures swarming around us in this area with the topiary and the water and all that. And as I looked around, what was more fascinating were the people. The people were disarmed. From the oldest of men to the youngest of children, everyone was childlike and innocent. Everyone looking at these butterflies was brought to this vulnerable level. And I began to think, maybe that's our purpose in life, not to let our past define us, not to let it destroy us, but make our own metamorphosis like the butterfly and do something more noble with our lives. And in doing that, spread beauty to the world like a butterfly does, pollinating, making the world a more
beautiful
place.
Beautiful,
so that's translated for you in work with specific kids, correct?
That's right. Now with the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation, we help get the creative arts and literature into the lives of at-risk kids. The very same things I stumbled across as a child has become evidence-based programming to make sure these kids find and turn their passion, their pain into, and passion into purpose.
So if any of our listeners wanted to contact you or get involved in the foundation, well, first of all, what have you found that saves our criminal justice system involving at-risk kids at an early age?
See, these kids are reacting from environments like I suffered. You know, they're not born this way. They're reacting to all sorts of, you know, whether it's poverty or drug abuse or their parents being dysfunctional, divorce, low socioeconomic conditions, all sorts of things. These kids are reacting. So if we can provide them with the tools to live a productive life, we believe through the creative arts and literature, we're actually giving them hope. We're providing them ways to find their potential and uncover who they are and what they can become. So with this evidence-based programming, we've seen tremendous results. And in fact, instead of putting these kids in juvenile detention facilities, there's a study done in 2011. The state of Florida saved something like $140 million in 2011 alone by diverting children from going to the juvenile justice system and putting them instead into creative arts-based, evidence-based programming. I mean, right there is incentive enough, but to realize that these kids are becoming better people, that they're not, there's the recidivism rate's lower, and they actually believe in themselves. I mean, it's just a win-win for everybody.
Now, you have a crowdfunding campaign that's going to be starting before the holidays, correct?
That's right. We're starting this campaign. You can learn more about it at stclairbutterflyfoundation.org or scbf.org and get involved. We want people to just really support what we're doing because these programs will change the world.
Thank you, Chip and Lisa. I just want to really recommend The Butterfly Garden, a memoir, to everyone. It's an amazing read. It's a revelation, and the Detroit Free Press said The Butterfly Garden is not to be missed. I think John and I agree.
Thank you, guys.
You know, if we have a little bit of time, is there any instances that you can point to, you know, in dealing with one of these kids?
Yeah, one of the kids just last week, he's in our creative writing class that Lisa and I guest teach, and he came in usually bubbly, you know, really outgoing kid, just very sullen. His mood was dark. And all of a sudden, you know, he's crying and we're trying to talk to him and bring out what's going on in his world. Because a lot of times you don't know their backgrounds, but you know there's something wrong. And his brother, who he looked up to, was 25 years old. His brother just went to prison for life for murder. This is their reality. This was a role model of his, and he's never going to see him again, at least never on the outside. And Lisa asked him, do you think he's in the right place? And he looked at us and he said, yeah, he is. He's in the right place. So this kid, I know, is going to be okay. And I said, use this as an example and use this to thrust you into something. This was kind of his butterfly moment to do something great.
Right. The Butterfly Foundation, prevention, intervention, rehabilitation.
Well, I want to end by thanking you too. It's just wonderful. It's inspiring to see what you do individually and inspiring to see what you do as a couple. I think it's just a wonderful example of a relationship that is really going to change the world. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. And I hope that all of our listeners take the time to get a hold of you, send you an email, or get involved in the foundation or in the crowdfunding that's going to be happening. And, you know, maybe these guys can have even a happier Christmas.
That's it. Absolutely. I mean, there's so many ways to get involved. And thank you guys for having us on the show.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
Bless you, too.
Let's go change the world.
One of the things that another kid, you know, a lot of these kids face adversity in many ways. One of our kids has spent most of his childhood in and out of hospitals because of cancer. And he actually ended up doing the best, getting the highest marks in our creative writing curriculum and became student of the month in the entire school. And he attributes a lot of that to the belief and the love the St. Clair Butterfly Foundation has shown him, and our philosophy of being the change, as Gandhi said, those are words we live by, be the change you wish to see in the world. So for listeners, if they want to tune in next week to the Butterfly Moment, where should they find more about your show?
EmpowerRadio.com.
And you can also go on our website, butterflylifecoaching.com.
Well, I know we'll be tuning in, so I hope others will as well.
Thanks.
They will.